Browns standpoint, able to get a deflection there. So Bristol Bay ball, score is 31-43. Bristol Bay has the ball, 7-point leading. Bristol Bay ball out of bounds. Number 15, Aurelia, inbounding it, passing it in. And that foul, there's going to be a foul on Sandpoint there on the ground. That foul was called on Tyler Gunderson. Looks like a blocking foul on the ground there. So Bristol Bay ball out of bounds.
Bristol Bay.
Ball passes it around to Lilo. Passes it to Torino on the left side. Lilo with a deep three-pointer airballs it, but rebounded by Aurelia. Sandpoint is going to grab that and take it the other way. Sandpoint with the ball, passing it around the top of the three-point line. Oh, stolen by Bristol Bay. Oh, but a bad pass from Caden Torino. Bristol Bay is stolen by Sandpoint. Coming the other way. And a shot attempt from number 20 for Sandpoint there. No good. Bristol Bay is going to get the rebound. So Bristol Bay bringing it up the court. Number 0, Torino with the ball, looking to pass here. Boyce Anderson passes to Lilo. Shot attempt, but some pressure there by Sandpoint, and they're going to get the rebound. Britt bringing it up the ball, looking to get a shot, but can't get it. He is fouled and going to go to the line. So two free throws from Rowdy Tripp, our high scorer of the night tonight, hoping to extend Sandpoint's lead. Score is 31-43. Sandpoint is leading this game with a 12-point margin here. 5 minutes left. Rowdy Tripp with the free throw. No good. So Rowdy Tripp is 4 for 5 tonight from the free throw line. Going to shoot another one here. Hoping to extend Sandpoint's lead. Second attempt, no good. Just hits the top of the rim and comes back out. So Rowdy Tripp, 0 for 2 on those free throw attempts. Bristol Bay has the rebound and they're taking it down. Stolen by Sandpoint. Rowdy Tripp with the ball. Passes it to Gunderson, who's going to take it in. Passing it to Peter Kalugin, who's going to go for the shot. No good. Misses the shot. Bristol Bay with the rebound. Fast break attempt here by Bristol Bay. Three-pointer by Aurelia of Bristol Bay. No good. And deflected off of 24, Will Palmer out of bounds. Sandpoint ball. 4 minutes and 46 seconds left in this game. Sandpoint with a 12-point lead. A three-point shot by number 3, Kaminga, for Sandpoint. Bristol Bay with the ball, score is 31-46, Sandpoint leading this game. Bristol Bay passing it around the top of the three-point line. Looking inside, can't get it. It's stolen by Tripp. Looks like he was trying to get the ball back there, but it's going to be a Bristol Bay ball out of bounds on number 23, Tripp. Three-point attempt by Aurelia. That's an air ball. Sandpoint's going to grab that. Setting it up here. Sandpoint with the lead, 31-46. Tripp looking for 2 points. He's got it. So Rowdy Tripp, number 23 of Sandpoint, is balling out tonight, guys. High scorer of this game. And he just got a steal there. Took it from Bristol Bay. Is going the other way. Ooh, but a turnover from Tripp. Bristol Bay is going to get the ball coming the other way. And looks like a foul there. So a foul on the ground by Sandpoint. So Bristol Bay ball out of bounds. Bristol Bay taking the ball out of bounds. 31-48 now. Sandpoint still leading this game. Bristol Bay passing around the ball around the top of the key. Turnover. And Peter Kalugin with the steal. He's going to pass it to Rowdy Tripp. He's going to pass it deep down court to Gunderson. Gunderson looking for shot. He's going to pass to number 20 on Sandpoint. Passing it around the top of the three-point line. Tripp with the ball. He's going to pass it to the high key. Back to Gunderson. He's taking it in, looking for the drive. No good. Tried a layup there, but couldn't get it. Bristol Bay at the rebound, bringing it in. Number 15 for Bristol Bay goes for a fast break layup. Can't get it. That's a miss. He's going to get the ball back. Passing it out to Julian Trifon. Back in to Number 24, Will Palmer, who was fouled on the shot attempt there. So Will Palmer for Bristol Bay going to the line. Score is 31-48. Sandpoint leading this game. 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Winner of this game will advance in the regionals tournament, looking for a chance to play in the 1A state tournament here. So Will Palmer, number 24 of Bristol Bay, good for that first free throw attempt, shooting a second here. Will Palmer with a shot, and it is good. 2 for 2 by Will Palmer. Score is 33-48. Sandpoint with the lead here. And the ball. Gunderson taking the ball up for Sandpoint. Tripp. Pass to Tripp. Passing around. Driving in. Gunderson with the ball on the three-point line. Three-point attempt. No good. Rebounded by Golovin. He's going to pass that out. Tripp has the ball. Peter Kaluga. Mia's got it. A jump shot by Peter Kalugin. Very nice shot. Bristol Bay with the ball passing around the three-point line. And that's 15 Arulia with a nice jump shot there for Bristol Bay to give them 2 points. Score is 35-50. Sandpoint with the lead. Sandpoint with the ball. Number 3. Passing it outside. Gunderson going for the layup. No good. Bristol Bay gets the rebound. They're taking it the other way. So Aurelia for Bristol Bay with a three-point shot, and he's got it. Looks like Rowdy Tripp of Sandpoint there was inbounding the ball and stepped over the line, so that's going to be a turnover. Bristol Bay gets the ball back. 38-50, inbound by Aurelia. Passes it too long. That's going to be a fast break. Oh, no. Tyler Gunderson misses the layup. On the fast break attempt for Sandpoint there. Would have been an easy 2 points. Could not get it. So foul on Sandpoint there. The missed layup from Gunderson. Bristol Bay got the rebound. And then number 3 of Sandpoint with the foul. Bristol Bay ball. So looks like we're going into the bonus here. Bristol Bay with the bonus. Five team fouls from Sandpoint, which means that we will be shooting free throws. On the line right now, we have Julian Trifon of Bristol Bay shooting 2 free throws. He misses the first one. Score is 38-50. 1 minute and 39 seconds left. Sandpoint leading this game by 12 points. Julian Trifon looking for a second free throw. Can't get it. And rebounded by Sandpoint. Number 4 for Sandpoint passes it to Kalugin. Who's going to go for a jump shot? No good. Bristol Bay getting the rebound. Stolen by Kalugin. Kalugin goes for the layup attempt there, but is fouled. He's going to go to the line. The 2 points from Kalugin to extend the Sandpoint lead here. 1 minute, 30 seconds left in this game. Score is 38-50. Kalugin, first free throw is good. So our score is now 38-51, Sandpoint with the lead. Hoping to finish this game out strong. These are important free throws from Kalugin. Going for his second attempt. No good. Rebounded by Bristol Bay. They're taking it the other way. Aurelia passing it down low. No good. That was a shot attempt by Torino of Bristol Bay. Couldn't get the shot, but he's going to draw the foul and go to the line. Some important free throws here for Bristol Bay. If they want to stay in the winner's bracket of this tournament, they need these 2 free throws right now. Caden Torino on the line. Score is 38-51. First free throw, no good. So Caden Torino not able to get that first free throw. Looking for the second attempt. Score is 38-51. Sandpoint leading. Second attempt is good. He's going to bank it in. So score is 39-51. Sandpoint still leading. Sandpoint with the ball. And Gunderson driving the ball in. He's going to take it back out, passing it to the top of the three-point line. Rowdy Tripp. Timeout by Sandpoint. They're going to talk it over right here. So end of the game here. 12-point lead by Sandpoint. Score is 39-51. Bristol Bay in the bonus. Sandpoint having five fouls. So from here on out, any fouls committed by Sam Point are going, even if they're a shooting foul, if they're on the ground, whatever it is, they're going to be shooting free throws. So Bristol Bay has a chance here to maybe get a few points off of free throws, but not much time left. 12-point game, 1 minute and 10 seconds left. Sandpoint is up. But, hey, this is 1A basketball in Region 1. Anything can happen. We've seen crazier stuff. Sandpoint inbounding the ball. Rowdy Tripp looking for the pass in. He's going to pass it to Gunderson. Gunderson to Kalugin. Kalugin with an easy 2 points there for Sandpoint. So score is 39-53. 1 minute left on the clock. Bristol Bay with the ball. Number four for Bristol Bay shoots. 3-point attempt. No good. Tripp with the rebound, but he is fouled, it looks like. That foul is going to be on number 15 of Bristol Bay, Riley Arulia. And Bristol Bay putting on a tight full court man pressure here, trying to get the ball back, leaving Gunderson wide open, though. And Gunderson misses a wide open layup. Bristol Bay getting the rebound. Score is 39-53, 42 seconds left in the game. Sandpoint with a steal there, taking it down the other way, looking for a shot. No good. That was number three, Capo Kamunga, looking for the free throw, but he is fouled. Number three for Sandpoint. He's going to go to the line and shoot two. So 35 seconds left in this game. Sandpoint leading 53-39. I mean, this Sandpoint pretty much has this game put away. Bringing in some substitutions. Number 24 for Sandpoint, Caden Foster, is going to sub in for Peter Kalugin there. So number three for Sandpoint, shooting a second free throw, missed the first one, gets the second one, and it's good. So score is now 39-54. Sandpoint is up. Bristol Bay putting up a three, no good. Sandpoint gets the rebound, bringing it the other way. Some fast break points there by number three from Sandpoint. Bristol Bay inbounding the ball, bringing it up the court. Riley Arulia looking for a pass, a 3-point attempt by Boyce Anderson. The bank is open. 3-point shot from Anderson. Sandpoint with the ball, trying to get the clock to run out. We have 5 seconds left. Number four for Sandpoint dribbling the ball out. And there is the game, folks. 56-42. Sandpoint with a decisive victory over Bristol Bay to advance to the next round of the Region 1 regional tournament. So just for anybody that's just tuning in, this is an important tournament. Top two teams coming out of this tournament will be advancing to the 1A state tournament. So an awesome game there from both teams. Both teams shaking hands, and we are now going to go to dinner. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Just want to remind everyone that our next game of this tournament will be at 6:30 between New Haven and Tenalian. We are not broadcasting that game on this channel. But if you do want to watch that game, go to the NFHSnetwork.com and search Tenalian, where you can watch that game. But later tonight, 8 o'clock, number 3 seed King Cove will be playing number 6 seed New Stuyahog. And that is taking place at 8 o'clock tonight, and that will be broadcast on this channel. So tune in for another exciting match of 1A basketball. So up next, we have Sandpoint advancing to the next part of the bracket. So they will be playing the winner of King Cove and New Stu, which is going on tonight. Bristol Bay moving into the loser's bracket. So they're going to play the loser of King Cove versus New Stu. So stay tuned in to see how those games go. Tonight's evening game between New Haven and Tenalian will be played. Winner of that game will play the number one seed Manicotic, who has a first round bye. A loser of that game is going to get a bye in the loser's bracket. So thanks for watching, guys. That's the end of the game.
Yeah, folks, let's just continue with what's on the radio station. Already programmed. I got a bunch of stuff to do down below. I get the other game going. That's at 5:30. That's coming right up, and that's a Sandpoint girls game.
In the last couple of weeks, however, the U.S.-Ukraine relationship has felt anything but secure. The Trump administration has squeezed Zelensky to quickly sign a deal that gives Ukraine very little. Trump has also insisted that Ukraine pay for aid the U.S. has already given the country, citing a price tag much higher than the actual amount. It all made Annabella Morina so angry that she organized a small protest outside the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv. She pointed to a banner that read, "Trump makes America very small."
Because what Trump is doing is against the principles of democracy and freedom and the values I associate with America. He's tarnishing the reputation of America.
Morina and other protesters said they were not against a deal per se, but were horrified at the Trump administration's behavior. Yulia Abramova, a 39-year-old artist, compared the tactics to phone scammers who try to extort money through fear.
They say, "Let's do this quickly so you don't have time to think about it. Just give us the money or whatever we want," and you feel like you can't do anything about it.
Zelensky had refused to sign a previous version of the deal because it would have left Ukrainians deeply in debt. Switching to English at today's press conference, Zelensky said a final deal also needs security guarantees.
Without future security guarantees, we will not have really just peace, and we will not have really ceasefire, what Trump spoken about. And if we don't have it, nothing will work. So we will have nothing.
Zelensky said today that his team is hoping to convince Trump that protecting Ukraine is the way to a durable ceasefire. Zelensky said in his evening video address that he's traveling to Washington and is expecting negotiations on Friday. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Kyiv.
Thank you for listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. Thank you.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Fisher Investments. As a fiduciary, Fisher Investments is obligated to act in their clients' best interest. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From Indeed, committed to giving job listings increased visibility with relevant candidates through its sponsored jobs feature. Learn more at indeed.com/NPR. And from the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Juana Summers.
And I'm Ari Shapiro. The Trump administration is touting its crackdown on illegal immigration as a success. But Trump's critics say much of that crackdown is just for show. And a recent NPR poll suggests that show may be playing into widely held misperceptions about immigrants and crime. NPR's Joel Rose reports.
When immigration authorities launched major enforcement operations in Chicago last month, they brought along an unusual guest, Phil McGraw, the TV personality better known as Dr. Phil.
You've never been deported before?
Dr. Phil.
Yeah? How do you know me?
Over the next few weeks, immigration and customs enforcement officials carried out similar actions across the country, targeting what they call criminal aliens. And the TV cameras were never far behind. From New York City to Aurora, Colorado.
Fox News was embedded exclusively in Wednesday's operation, which involved hundreds of federal agents.
But that operation yielded only about 30 arrests, far fewer than the 100 members of the Tren de Aragua gang that ICE officials said they were targeting. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem told NBC News that the administration was sending hardened criminals to the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
It will hold the worst of the worst. We are going after people that had warrants out for their arrest on murders and rapes, assaults, gun purchases, drug trafficking.
That was the public message. But in response to a lawsuit, the administration later conceded that nearly 30% of the migrants sent to Guantanamo were considered, quote, low-threat illegal aliens with no serious criminal record.
I worry about this model where Trump almost acts as a kind of reality show producer.
Brendan Nyhan is a professor at Dartmouth College, where he studies political communication and misperceptions. He says ICE has conducted operations like this under previous administrations, and there have been media ride-alongs, too. But Nyhan says this level of integration between law enforcement and media feels different.
You worry about the tail wagging the dog, that the Trump administration is almost performing what it does for the benefit of Fox and other allied media sources.
These videos and images have allowed President Trump to look tough on immigration, Nyhan says, even as the numbers of arrests and deportations have fallen short of the White House's goals. At the same time, experts worry the administration is reinforcing misperceptions about immigrants and crime. A recent NPR Ipsos poll found that people who get their news from Fox and conservative media are more likely to believe that immigrants on average commit more crimes than native-born people, and that migrants are smuggling most of the fentanyl that's coming across the southern border. Those statements are both false. But our poll shows that people who get their news from Fox and conservative media were twice as likely to believe them as those who don't. They're also more likely to believe this claim about migrants that President Trump makes frequently without any evidence.
Millions and millions of people that are coming from prisons, insane asylums, their mental institutions, and sending all of these people.
Dangerous criminals, many from prisons and mental institutions.
The NPR Ipsos poll found that fewer than a quarter of Americans believe that to be true. But among people who get their news from Fox and conservative media, it's more than half.
It's all a reinforcement effect.
Danigal Young is a professor of communication and political science at the University of Delaware. She says it's unclear which comes first, the media echo chamber or the misperceptions. But Young says there is an effect.
It's not about learning this false information as much as it is having that false information sewn into your identity, becoming more and more of a part of who you are and how you see the world. That's the effect.
The Department of Homeland Security did not respond to a request for comment, but administration officials argue that images of immigrants being detained and deported send a strong deterrent message. And Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem pushed back on concerns that these immigration operations are more, quote, spectacle, unquote, than substance during an interview with CBS.
It's not a spectacle. This is our nation's law enforcement judicial process. The scales of justice are equally applied to everybody. We want transparency on this.
But media experts say there's more going on here than transparency. Danigal Young at the University of Delaware says the Trump administration is using the techniques of reality TV that the president honed for decades in real estate and as the star and co-producer of The Apprentice for 14 seasons.
By casting himself as the decider and the boss, he made it so. He performatively made it so. He does know what he's doing in his construction of reality.
Trump has brought that same deliberate construction of reality to immigration, Young says. And for a big share of the country, it's working. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
A child has died from measles in West Texas. It is the result of an outbreak over the past few weeks that has grown to 130 cases in two states. NPR's Ping Wong has more.
Health officials in Texas say the child who died was of school age and was not vaccinated. It's the first measles death the U.S. has seen since 2015. Dr. Carol Baker is a pediatrician based in Houston.
We knew this was going to happen as we heard public health information and then media reports of the number of people unvaccinated.
She's retired from the Baylor College of Medicine after a long career in infectious diseases and vaccine development.
So I'm not surprised, but I am so sad.
Measles is so contagious, and it can be really awful to get. Baker, who's in her 80s, remembers getting it in her childhood.
Anybody who's had natural measles remembers it being the worst of the childhood illnesses.
Dr. Daniel Karitzkis is infectious disease chief at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. He's in his 60s and also had it as a child.
But it used to be a routine childhood infection along with chickenpox and mumps and German measles, but it came with some risk. And the risks particularly are from measles pneumonia and from measles encephalitis.
Encephalitis, or swelling in the brain. Before vaccines, measles caused around 1,000 cases of encephalitis in the U.S. each year. Karitzkis says there are also hundreds of deaths.
During the time before vaccination, measles has a mortality of around 5%, and in impoverished areas, maybe 20 to 30%.
About 25 years ago, the disease was considered eliminated in the U.S. due to high rates of vaccination with the MMR shot. That stands for measles, mumps, and rubella. But in the past 5 years or so, the national vaccination rate for school-aged kids has dipped below 95%. That's the level it takes to prevent community outbreaks, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And in pockets of the country, like in Gaines County, Texas, where the current outbreak started, the rate has dropped far lower, down to around 80%. Public health experts say moments like these underscore the importance of vaccines. Matt Ferrari is an infectious diseases researcher at Penn State.
Many of these resources seem frivolous until a crisis occurs, and then we realize why we kept them around.
That's not just vaccines, he says, but the people and resources to keep the whole public health system running. And right now, in Texas, Catherine Wells, public health director for the city of Lubbock, says they just need more help to get the outbreak under control.
We really need to push out more advertisement, more vaccines, getting people really going door to door to talk to families.
Otherwise, more measles deaths could come. Ping Huang, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri wants to hold tech companies accountable.
They can take our data without our knowledge. They can sell it without our permission. They can market it without our control. All of these are huge problems.
In Trump's White House, relationships with big tech are shifting. But Hawley says his mission hasn't changed. Tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Juana Summers. A new series from NPR's Embedded podcast follows a reporter who thinks his dad has gone all in on conspiracy theories.
You will realize that I'm not as big a crackpot as you think I am, and that these are not conspiracy theories. These are reality.
Their story after these headlines.
Live from NPR News in Culver City, California, I'm Dwayne Brown. President Trump suggested today that his proposed tariffs on Canadian and Mexican goods would be bumped out by another month. The taxes were initially supposed to go into effect on February 1st, as NPR's Daniel Kurtzleben reports.
The tariffs had been delayed until next week. But at his cabinet meeting today, Trump seemed to say that his proposed 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico would now be delayed again.
April 2nd. I was going to do it on April 1st, but I'm a little bit superstitious. I made it April 2nd. The tariffs go on. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
But it was also unclear how hard and fast that new deadline would be. Later, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick seemed to say it was contingent on Canada and Mexico slowing the flow of fentanyl. Trump has imposed a 10% tariff on Chinese goods, but has proposed many others. That uncertainty, economists say, can itself be harmful because it hampers business investment. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
The Department of Agriculture plans to invest up to $1 billion to fight the avian flu outbreak that's pushed egg prices to record highs. NPR's Scott Horsley reports much of that money is aimed at protecting the nation's flock of egg-laying hens.
Egg prices jumped more than 15% last month, and panicked buyers emptied store shelves after farmers were forced to cull millions of laying hens in an effort to slow the spread of avian flu. The Agriculture Department says it will spend up to $500 million boosting biosafety precautions at egg farms. Another $400 million will go to speed the replacement of lost birds, although it can take 6 months to a year to raise a productive laying hen. The federal government is also exploring ways to temporarily boost the supply of imported eggs and possibly to vaccinate domestic chickens. Vaccination efforts are challenging, however. They can make it harder to export birds raised for meat. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. This week's Billboard charts are out, and Drake has the number one album in the country. NPR's Stephen Thompson has the report.
Last week, Kendrick Lamar dominated the Billboard charts. He had the number one album and song in the country, and many more of his works peppered the top 10. This week, he relinquishes the number one spot on the albums chart to a familiar nemesis, the rapper Drake, who inspired several of Lamar's recent hits. Drake's album, Some Sexy Songs for You, is a collaboration with the producer Party Next Door. Kendrick Lamar still dominates the top of this week's singles chart with four of the week's top five songs. But just beneath him, Drake has set a new milestone. With two songs debuting in the top 10, he's now had 80 top 10 hits. That's an all-time record. Stephen Thompson, NPR News.
The Academy Awards will be held on Sunday here in Los Angeles and streaming for the first time on Hulu, airing on ABC. Conan O'Brien is hosting this year's Oscars ceremony that will be transformed by the devastating Los Angeles wildfires. The Academy of Motion Pictures and Sciences has pledged to help its members and the broader film community recover from the historic fires that destroyed or damaged more than 8,000 homes and businesses back in early January. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Hiscox, committed to helping small businesses protect their dreams. Quotes and information on customized insurance for specific risks are available at Hiscox.com. Hiscox, business insurance experts. From the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Juana Summers. One of the country's greatest professional athletes is hanging up her high tops. For more than 20 years, Diana Taurasi was a giant in the world of women's basketball. She won everywhere that she went, from the University of Connecticut to 20 seasons with the Phoenix Mercury and 6 Olympic Games. And after all of that, she now says it is time to retire. I'm joined now by NPR sports correspondent Becky Sullivan. Hi there.
Hey, Juana.
I mean, Becky, what hasn't Diana Taurasi done?
I know. Yeah, I think it's actually safe to say that she is the most decorated player in the history of women's basketball. In the WNBA, as you mentioned, you know, playing for the Phoenix Mercury, she led them to 3 titles. She won MVP in 2009. She was named an All-Star 11 times. She is the league's all-time leading scorer. She's the only player ever to pass 10,000 points scored in her career. Her rival at UConn, just going back to college, the 3 consecutive titles that she won there helped cement the Huskies' decades-long grip on college basketball and the women's game, so dominant that Coach Gino Auriemma famously said that UConn was going to win a game because, quote, we have Diana and you don't. And then, of course, the 6 Olympic gold medals. I mean, she's the only basketball player, man or woman, to do that. She's achieved all there is to achieve at every level of the game, and she went on The View today to talk retirement, and she alluded directly to that.
I think just being 42 and really doing everything that I could have ever dreamt of doing on a basketball court,
yeah.
I felt full. I was happy. Yeah. I was ready to move on. I don't know what that looks like, but I was ready.
But Becky, it wasn't just her success on the court that's made so many people love her, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's one of a kind. I mean, obviously, extremely competitive and absolute gamer when she's actually playing basketball. But I think it's clear to everybody on and off the court that Diana Taurasi is just one of the biggest personalities in sports. You know, there's a lot of scrutiny on women all the time, professional athletes, on their conduct on and off the court. As a woman myself, I think it's always been tremendous to watch Diana Taurasi compete with such swagger. And that personality comes through in interviews when she's behind the mic. So I pulled a little clip just to give you a little taste here. She and fellow basketball star Sue Bird have had a show on ESPN these last few years during the women's college basketball tournament. And this clip was making the rounds after her retirement announcement. Let's listen.
I mean, think about these kids. They're working with personal trainers in college.
Yeah.
I was pounding beers and cheeseburgers in college.
Also same, to be clear. But Becky, I mean, I think that clip, it really gets at something. Her career from college now was 25 years, and that truly was just a transformational 25 years for women's basketball.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, put it another way, she came to the WNBA when the league was under 10 years old. And back then, in the early 2000s, the league was at its lowest moment, the WNBA was. Teams were folding. They were struggling to keep ratings up. And the turnaround since then has been enormous. Ratings, those TV ratings and attendance were up massively last season. The league is now actively adding new teams. The WNBA and NBA signed this media rights deal last summer. That kicks in next year. And so, in other words, you have investors, you have league officials, you have media executives, and the players' union all betting together that this growth for the WNBA is going to continue. So from Diana Taurasi's perspective, I think that's remarkable. Now, of course, you have the WNBA's best young star, Caitlin Clark, born after the league began. She grew up idolizing Diana Taurasi. So it's just amazing to see that come full circle.
Amazing indeed. NPR's Becky Sullivan, thank you.
You're welcome.
The Oscars are this Sunday, and one movie up for several top awards is getting lots of buzz in Brazil. It's called I'm Still Here, and chronicles the true story of a family upended by the South American country's 2 decades under dictatorship. As NPR's Kerry Kahn reports, the film is breaking box office records in Brazil and igniting scrutiny, both for its dark past and turbulent present.
So Rubens, tem uns homens aqui que...
The devastation awaiting Rubens Paiva hits viewers hard in the scene early in the movie, as armed men saunter into the family's idyllic middle-class home in Rio de Janeiro.
Deputado Rubens Paiva.
Deve ter algum engano, não sou deputado há anos.
The men take Paiva away, and he's never seen again. His wife, Unice, played by Brazilian actress Fernanda Torres, is a stunning stoic portrayal of the mother of five and her lifelong pursuit for justice. It's three Oscar nominations, Best Picture, Best International Film, and Torres's nod for Best Actress have helped drive record sales at home. At this packed Rio theater, Carolina Fajari, a 27-year-old advertising exec, says she loved it.
When we have a movie that becomes a success, that is nominated for an Oscar, and people are getting to know this history, it is the best picture for us.
That history is touching Brazilians and sparking debate. More than 400 people were killed and thousands tortured during the dictatorship that lasted from 1964 to 1985. Even after the return of democracy, no one in the military was ever jailed. Unlike in other Latin American dictatorships, says Octavio Amorim Neto, a political scientist at Rio's FGV Foundation.
Our transition was very conservative, controlled by the military. And the main goal was to avoid a scenario like the one in Argentina. The military in Argentina were heavily punished. This never happened in Brazil.
And Amorim says, while Brazil's dictatorship was less violent, the military was able to emerge with power and prestige. He says even re-entering politics, as it did most recently during the far-right government of former President Jair Bolsonaro, who's now facing charges of leading a coup in 2022.
That's why people have been so sensitive to this movie, not only because of the sad memories of the military regime, but also because of the sad memories of the recent Bolsonaro government.
The director of I'm Still Here said Bolsonaro's rule motivated him to start the project, which took more than 7 years to finish. But given how deeply divided the country is these days, it's unclear whether many Brazilian conservatives are moved by the film. At a school ceremony on a base in Rio, retired Colonel Marcelo Sousa was full of pride watching his 12-year-old daughter, who he says is learning important family values, including discipline and respect. When asked about the movie, he says he won't see it. He knows who's backing it. The left in Brazil want to rewrite history, he says. Many in the left are demanding accountability these days. They want death certificates of those killed by the state to be reissued stating that, which is what Unice Paiva achieved in her husband's case. They also want the military dictatorship's amnesty revoked, and in the case of Rubens Paiva, they want those officers still living that were charged in his death to be put on trial. This week, dozens of protesters invoking the movie and their chants gathered outside the Rio home of one of those men. Moviegoer 82-year-old Zande Ali says it was hard to watch and remember all the pain of the dictatorship, but everyone was telling her the film deserves the Oscar.
E também para fazer a minha avaliação, ao meu ver, já ganhou.
She says she came to decide for herself. Her opinion, it already won. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Rio de Janeiro.
You're listening to All Things Considered. President Donald Trump hasn't wasted time in his second term cutting away at the federal government, but when it comes to health care, Trump's voters may actually be looking for more government action, not less. Noam Levy with our partner KFF Health News reports.
Jason Rouse voted for Donald Trump three times. He's a retired firefighter in northern Michigan. He's 53. Health care costs are taking a bigger pinch out of his savings, and he wouldn't mind some new government rules to keep his medical bills in check.
I'd like to see a lower cap on what I have to pay out of pocket per year. The prices are just ridiculous.
Rouse participated in an online focus group of Trump voters that I listened in on. It was convened and paid for by two public opinion firms. Christine Matthews leads one. She's worked in Republican politics for decades. She says not long ago, it would have been rare to hear a GOP voter call for regulation.
The discussions
Yeah, I'm getting no announcer here, folks, so I really don't know what's going on. I found the game, but no announcer.
Look at how crooked it is.
Going to get that rebound and bring it back their way. Number 15 for Bristol Bay, Aurelia has the ball. He's driving in. Ooh, a nice little give and go from there from Aurelia to get another 2 points for Bristol Bay. So score is tied at 4-4. 4 minutes remaining in the first quarter. Standpoint with the ball, passing it around the three-point line. A three-point attempt from Zero. No good. It's Bristol Bay with the rebound. It's a turnover. Standpoint has the ball back. Number 4, Rowdy Tripp with the ball at the top of the key. Looking for a 3, can't get it. Rebound by Julian Trifon. He's going to be taking it the other way for Bristol Bay. Score is 4-4 still. Bristol Bay.
Hold on just a quick second, folks. We're going to get things set up here. All right. All right, score is 9-10 in favor of the New Sohawk Eagles. Shot up by Mia, and Sam Point, who has trailed by 4, is now up by 1. Yep, 6-11 now to go here in the second quarter, or the first half. All right, ball in the hands of New Sohawk. They're now down by 1. Morgan snatches the ball. Travel. A great defensive play there by Morgan. Yep. New Seahawks throwing underneath their basket. And sorry for not having these girls' names. There was a little mix-up with the roster, so we'll get the roster here and have their names correct for their next game, or maybe even at halftime. 25 with the ball, way outside. Passed in. Good triangle pass. Now for a three-point shot. Ball goes out of bounds, but saved by New Stu. Great hustle there. Misty Marine gets aggressive and just snatches the ball out there for the Lady Eagles.
standpoint with the ball. Mia gets knocked down. Yeah, that was a quick pass. She gets knocked over. Mia Cromer with a good hustle there. Standpoint will throw in underneath their own basket. Charlotte Marcus sets it up. Lob, hands it into Missy. Outside of Whitney for three. Nice arc. Oh, in and out. Huge rebound by Missy Marine. Shot now by Mia. Over the rim. Goes in the hands of Whitney for a long two. Top of the rim, no good. Standpoint getting good looks at the basket. Yeah, not quite going down. 5 minutes left to go here in the first half. 11 for Standpoint, 10 for Nusu. Nusu Hawk with the ball. Standpoint playing aggressive defense as well. Not quite the full court press that Nusu Hawk brought in, but doing a good job here on the half court. Good screen set up.
Yeah, timeout.
Timeout called by Nusu Hawk. Score is 11 to 10 with 4 minutes and 47 seconds left to go here in the first half. Nusu Hawk had a good screen set up there. They've done a great job keeping their offense in motion, but Standpoint being very patient on their offense, passing the ball around, and getting good looks at the basket and taking them.
That's something too. Yeah, they are really finding something in them. It's like you got to give credit to her. She made a big three. If it wasn't for her, they would still be like trailing quite a bit.
Yep, and so Standpoint working here, and I just don't think they thought Nusu Hawk was going to come out with that degree of hustle. They've done a great job here. Lots of respect for the Lady Eagles from Nusu. They're in the game here, shot up, no good. But Nusu gets her own rebound, passing the ball back outside. Good handles there by number four. Ball poked out and chased down by Misty, but can't quite catch up. Misty Marine's coming in very aggressively here with her defense. 25 inside the three-point line. Stolen by Whitney. Whitney Smith on a fast break. Nice clean deflection there by number three from New Siri Hawk. Excellent. Good. Very clean. Good fast break there by Whitney Smith. And, you know, being one of the, I think looking at the shortest player on the court there, but she had a big play right there, but good deflection by number three. Great pass into the post, sent back outside by Standpoint. Misty drives in, floater from five out, no good. Chased down her rebound, almost gets it back. New Seahawk now with the ball. 4 minutes left in the first half, they are down by one. Four, gets a screen. Nice handoff there by Standpoint. Another pass at the top of the three-point line. Long shot. No good. Rebound goes to Whitney. Whitney Smith on a fast break. Waits for her team to catch up. And Standpoint will set up their offense. Nice drive by Morgan. Passes into traffic. She got a little contact when she drove in, too.
No, I see that, too. Yeah, but I just don't know.
Yep. Oh yeah, I always give it to in favor of the refs, that's for sure. 11 to 10 still in favor of Standpoint. 3:23 left in the half. Nice shot by New Studio Hawk. Up, no good. Rebound to Standpoint. Whitney gets the pass. Pass back to Misty, who drives, sends it outside to Smith for three. Oh, back iron, no good. Ball gets picked up by Morgan Gunnarsson, who hands it back to Marine. Charlotte, laser pass down into the post. Ball deflected off of her hands, now bounds.
I know, but that laser pass.
What a pass.
That was insane.
Yeah, that was a really great pass there by Charlotte to Mia. Standpoint with the ball outside the perimeter. Nice man-to-man here. Mia gets it and outside to Charlotte for three. Front of the rim. Rebound to Nusu. Nusu Hawk with the ball. 2 minutes, 41 seconds. They're down by one.
Picked up by Marine. Fast break by Charlotte. It looks like she's going to have this all the way. Finishes it. Good job by Charlotte Marcus on the fast break there. 13 now for Sandpoint. 10 for New Seahawk. Yeah. Doing a good job on the fast break there. New Seahawk still at 10 points. They've had a hard time converting the offensive play here in the second quarter. Nice defensive play by Whitney Smith. She's got those fast hands. New Stu lines up for that full court man. And I tell you, they're doing such a great job with the full court press. There they go. Stealing the ball. Great defensive effort there. Picked up and then picked out. Mia goes down trying to get it. Pass to 24, who stepping out of bounds. What action here. Charlotte Marcus, fast break. Marine fake the pass. Clean deflection by 25 from New Seahawk. What a great game. New Stu doing an excellent job on defense here, forcing that turnaround, and they're going to slow down here on offense and let everyone catch their breath, but Charlotte Marcus gets up there. Great defense by Misty. She's got out defense, forcing that turnover. Morgan comes back. Foul. Wow. Foul number one holding.
Wow, this is insane right now when I'm watching.
Real fast-paced action from both these squads. New Seahawk and Sandpoint both came to play. Loving it. Great effort from both these teams. New Seahawk forces another turnover. What a cross the post pass. Oh, the layup didn't go down. Putback also no good. Morgan gets it for Sandpoint. Number four almost tips the ball out. Nice pass to Charlotte. Now Mia drives the left-hand side, can't get it to go down. Oh, man, this full court pressure from New Seahawk is something else.
It's not even a joke.
1 minute left to go here in the first half. 13 for Sandpoint, 10 for New Stu. Shot up for the New Seahawk Eagles is good. Sandpoint back to a one-point lead here. Full court press. Misty's able to drive past and get past the half-court line. Morgan fakes it, sidesteps, takes her time. 30 seconds. Misty behind the defense gets a great layup. That was a great play there by the Sandpoint Eagles. Behind the defense, Misty gets the pass and finishes the layup. 15 now for Sandpoint, but 12 for New Seahawk, who is just nipping at their heels the entire second half. Pass to 25. Stop for three. In! Sandpoint will tie game. Whitney. We'll get it off. Fired. It's a good line. Oh, just misses. And in the last 5 seconds, New Seahawk gets a three-point shot.
I just cannot believe it.
I can't believe it either. And going into the second half, we're going to have a tied game here at 15 apiece. Sandpoint was in the lead for the vast majority of the second quarter, but New Seahawk just was able to keep persistent on their defense, force some great turnovers, and now we have a tied game. This is Austin Roof and Christopher Badcock for KSDP. We'll be back in just 10 minutes with more of this exciting first game of the Region 1 tournament here in King Cove.
Dose. From Workday. Workday is an AI platform for forward thinkers dedicated to transforming the way business leaders manage people and money today so they can transform tomorrow. Workday, moving business forever forward.